I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
Well, I'm excited to have our next guest on the Business of Intuition, Dana Barbato, who is the CEO and owner and founder of a HR support company called InvestorPro. And we got to be connected through a mutual acquaintance. And I've heard so many great things about you, Dana. Your company, it sounds like it's just taking off and even getting some international attention. And I'm wondering if you might just kind of give us a background on what your company does and what seems to be the reason for your success.
Well, I think the reason for our success starts with the fact that we are HR people building software for HR people. And it's just a different take on things. It's great to have a strong technical team that is building things that they're giving to HR to help them do their jobs. But when you don't clearly understand that job, it's not as easy to meet their needs. And so that's where hopefully the population of the product comes from and is starting to build. But I think it's much, much deeper than that. Our product is actually, it's an online platform that the employers use to conduct their workplace investigations. And they do that into discrimination, bullying, sexual harassment, but also conduct and policy violations, safety incidents, things of that nature. And what we have done is we have taken something that's very scary and intimidating and really made it into a standardized business process that takes away that this is going to be awful. People are going to get fired. I'm bringing you in here to just drill you on hard questions, and gives it to the managers and the HR professionals to go, look, this is our way that we fix problems around here. Let's get through this together. So it changes the entire focus on the process.
So as a non-HR person, if I'm working for a company, would your software product, in a sense, give me the ability to share a concern anonymously, or would my information, my name, all that sort of stuff also be included in what I'm communicating to the company?
We actually have it designed to do either. So when you're bringing your concern forward, at least in the states that allow an anonymous complaint, you can report in either via hotline where you can talk to a live person, or we have a very, very friendly interactive chatbot that the employees just love, because she doesn't come to them from the standpoint of, okay, what incident happened? It's, hey, is anybody hurt or, you know, afraid for their safety? Oh, no? Oh, good. Okay. Well, I feel better. Now let's just talk about what happened, that type of thing. And she will ask you, you know, if you want to share who you are and get some, you know, return contact from your managers or from HR, or if you would rather report as anonymous. And it works either way. And then it feeds directly into an investigation and notifies the people concerned that they do need to conduct a workplace investigation into the issue.
Got it. Understood. And so it sounds like you're actually getting quite a lot of interest in your product.
We are. You know, it was interesting from day one, 4 years ago, I guess it was, when we brought the product out, it was something so new that it did take us a little bit of time to build trust in the HR field and with HR professionals and executives that you could actually automate something like this. But again, being HR people, I did workplace investigations for 26 years, and being HR people, we could let them know, look, we're building this for you. And so it helped us to open that door to teach them that there is a new and better way to do this. And so that's really helped us gain some traction. But now I'm going out and I'm able to talk more big picture about what it means to have a process like this in your workplace and to earn the trust of employees and to get people to come forward earlier because they're comfortable with the process. And truly, that's what drove me to create this product and what keeps us moving forward and is helping us to gain ground.
So I can see where there might be a pretty egregious violation, say it's sexual harassment, say it's a safety issue, and I go to your site and I list my concern. how far will this tool go? Now, of course, there's so much more emphasis on diversity and inclusion. We have policies around how we communicate. We may have conflict resolution processes that we want to follow. There's leadership competencies that we might say we are or we are not adhering to. Does the tool go that far, or does it stay within more of those, well, lack of a better word, serious and legal issues?
You know, to me, having been an investigator, the serious and legal issues are only one portion of it. It really, truly is about opening up communications, teaching people how to talk about the hard things and do it respectfully and with a civility that reaches people across all diversities. And so what this product does is it really does help even managers that don't have any investigative experience to be able to be comfortable with the questions that they're asking, because we provide the core questions and we help them determine how to drill down into their clarifying questions in a way that they can obtain the information they need without it being a punitive or insulting type of manner. But it also takes you all the way through to a proprietary assessment process where it gives them kind of the perspective they need to really assess the information that they get from these interviews and make consistent, appropriate decisions, whether they're someone that's been doing them for 20 plus years or whether they're someone who maybe is a new manager and hasn't done them, which creates not only a better outcome for the investigation, but a better outcome for the participants in the investigation. So it really is a lot deeper than, say, the case management systems that you see out there.
I see. Got it. And what kind of industries are you seeing are most attractive to this? Or is there a certain size company that you are finding is your sweet spot?
Truly, I mean, I will tell you that, you know, everybody's subject to the laws as far as businesses are concerned. In some states, it's as few as one employee. In some states, or if they defer to federal, it's 15 or more employees. When you get into the discrimination and harassment and that type of thing, safety is usually much less than that, depending on your state laws. But so any size company, and we're finding the smaller ones, when they get up into, say, the 100 to 500 employees, those size companies tend to really use the product a lot and like it a lot because they don't have the bandwidth that they need within their HR department. But then really, our sweet spot is probably in the 1,000 to 10,000 range of employees, because they tend to have, a lot of times they have centralized HR and they've got many locations across the US and different state laws that are interacting with one another. But to be able to say, you know, company-wide, we have a consistent process that we use every time, and it's very respectful and it's unbiased. We're getting a lot of traction off of that from that size company because of that.
That's great. So when you wrote up your little description for our episode, you mentioned the word accountability. And I wanted to ask you more about this big picture philosophic. You've been in this industry a long time. You've seen a lot of things. And I've always thought that, you know, we've had a lot of emphasis these days in business around getting engagement and a lot of focus on that and showing up in cultures, evaluations, and, you know, measurement systems are abounding around how do we engage our employees more. But on the flip side, it seems that without the accountability to support the engagement, we end up with mediocrity.
Absolutely.
What's your take on this topic around engagement and, more importantly, maybe accountability? And where do you see businesses heading with this topic? And what are your recommendations?
Accountability, to me, has always been the number one factor, because without it, you can't fix the problems such as engagement and retention and that type of thing. It can't be done. And the way that I explain it to people when I go out and speak across the country is your accountability, if you think of your business as your, it's your home away from home. It's what I like to call your workhouse. And people want to go to work and should be able to go to work and feel comfortable, feel like they're respected, be able to bring forth their ideas and feel like they're going to be embraced and at least listened to. They want to feel like they can grow there. They want to feel like they are important and able to bring things to the table that that company needs to survive. And so what I tell them is, you know, you can have these walls of your house that are built around trust and that are built around opportunity and that are built around learning and things. And that's all great. But any employee that comes into this house and feels like they're going to be treated different than someone else, or they're going to be talked down to or harassed in some way, or have to work in a hostile work environment because not everyone is held accountable to that same level of standards, the house is going to fall and it's not going to be sturdy and people are not going to want to be there. So until you have that foundation of accountability, which is what your employee trust and all those other wonderful things that drive engagement are going to be there. If they don't believe that everybody is going to be treated the same and everyone's going to be treated fairly, and they don't have to put up with being subjected to incivil behaviors or rude behaviors, they're not going to be able to fix the engagement problem. They just really need to be able to build this trust and this positive feeling with their employees, build a culture of civility. And that happens first through accountability.
So a lot here, boy, I keep thinking as you're talking about accountability that it has everything to do with culture.
Absolutely.
And the word accountability, at least in my circle, sometimes has a fairly negative connotation. And I'm sure on a scale or a spectrum, accountability on one end could be punitive. You know, you've broken a rule, you've broken the law, we need to do something to respond to that. But on the other hand, on the other side of the spectrum around accountability, it seems that we might be about real ownership, but it's not seen as punitive, meaning that people might have a negative connotation towards accountability. And I guess my question to you is, how do you answer to that? How do you sort of change the mindset around accountability so we aren't bristling with it and seeing it as something we need to avoid?
Absolutely. And that's a great question, because it was a very negative term previously. But as companies are starting to put more focus on their culture, accountability is coming more and more into play. You know, when we used to go to these HR conventions, we would use the words accountability and people would shy away from it. And now we have this big, huge banner that says build a culture of accountability, and people stop dead in their tracks as they're walking by and they go, how? That's what I want to do. How do I do that? So we are really opening up the conversation. People are starting to talk about the importance. But just like you said, it doesn't have to be punitive. Accountability can help drive opportunity. So if I'm holding you accountable, let's say for some deficiencies in your work, right? You would think, well, that's negative, is it not? But the fact of the matter is, if I continue to operate in the mindset that you're not doing well in your job, so I'm just going to look over past you when we move on to, you know, promote someone or not give you any growth opportunities and that type of thing. Well, you're not holding the person accountable, but because of that, they are not able to grow either. And so by holding everyone accountable, by being able to say, you know what, you may not have strengths in this one little piece, but I see you having the strength to excel in this opportunity. How do you feel about learning a little bit there? And let's see how we can help you succeed. And let me tell you, that employee that you're being honest with, you know, if they're not doing well, they feel it. They know through their intuition that they're not meeting what they need to be meeting. So let's talk about it. Let's see how we can fix it. Is there maybe another place for you? Is there maybe something that you're like, yeah, you know, I've learned to do this, but this one part I've never really been trained on and I just don't feel comfortable with it. And so by opening up those accountability discussions and by holding everybody not just accountable to how they treat people, but also to the work that they do, also to their attendance. Also, you know, it's very possible you could meet with someone and go, you know what, it's your attendance is just not what it needs to be. You're late a lot, you're this, you're that, you're the other thing. And then you end up finding out, oh, well, that's because your daycare center doesn't open until 5 minutes before you're supposed to be here. So you're racing across town every day. Well, gee, if we fix that by 15 minutes, you feel better. You're not coming in all stressed out. We feel better. So opening up these accountability discussions doesn't mean it has to be negative. That can actually help you dig into what the problems are and bring people forward with their problems earlier so that we can create solutions that work for everyone.
Got it. This discussion about accountability, I think, is really impactful and timely. What's your thought? Because normally we see the discussion about accountability is that I am going to go hold you accountable. It sort of connotes a certain sort of power difference. And it's up to me to hold you accountable. So therefore, we're going to set in systems and processes to do that. But I'm wondering what your thought is about it also being bilateral, meaning that if I've got enough trust in my team and I have outed myself enough to say, as a leader, say, for example, or a team member, these are the things that I want to get better at, I want to improve on. And I also know that I'm a human being and I have blind spots like everybody, and I'm going to slip. I am asking you, I am requesting that you hold me accountable, that you point out when I make these slips, or that you let me know when I haven't lived up to the commitment that I've made before. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about this sort of bilateral approach to accountability.
I think it's amazingly powerful. I think that we need to let our employees, our direct reports, know that we don't have all the answers, you know, and that's something that used to be seen as weakness, but I really don't think that's the case anymore. If you open that door to your employees and make sure that you're ready to receive the feedback, doesn't mean you have to take action on everything. Maybe it just means a discussion when they're saying, hey, how come you never, you know, do this? Well, you're right. I hadn't seen that from your standpoint, but you bring it back to them as, you know, in the morning when I'm walking through here, I'm heading to a meeting and I'm thinking about what I need to do. So I don't stop and say hello. But you know what? On the way back from the meeting, I'm going to start making an effort to stop and see how things are going in the department before I head back to my office. And so just opening up that discussion does bring them forward, but not just even from that, but you're setting an example for peer-to-peer resolution. And we talk about this all the time with our investigation platform, because what happens is once it's used, not just for the really heavy, sticky stuff, but also just to gather information and start fixing problems, whether it's a procedural problem or whether it's a policy problem or whatever it is in the workplace, what it does is it sends the consistent message to your employees that, you know what, you guys can start fixing this between yourselves too. We're a place that learns more about what's not working for people. We share how we think, what our ideas are on how things can be better. And as we do that, you not only get the two-way communication going from maybe manager to direct report and direct report back to manager, but then you start getting direct report to direct report, and you get peer resolution where respect is building within the workforce, and there's no better driver of actual engagement than that actual working relationship building strongly within the people that work together in the same work group.
So you're inciting discussion. You're inciting healthy discussion.
Absolutely. And making it a comfortable place to happen, because, hey, if you can tell your boss, you know what, I'm not comfortable with the way that you're handling this, I wish we could maybe handle it more this way, well, then saying that to your peer is going to be so much easier.
So I have a curious question. I was thinking about this, and I'm wondering if other people wonder this sometimes too, is that when we think about conflict, and I've had conflict resolution conversations with people over the years, and I find out that people still use email as a way to communicate their displeasure about something. And the medium itself actually exacerbates in many ways the situation. And I remember once years ago, we were doing work with Microsoft up in Seattle or Bellevue there, Redmond it was, and we were talking to these guys and gals about how they were managing conflict and the way in which they were doing it. And they would say, well, we would just send an email and try to work it out that way. And I said, well, where are these people located? You know, are they across the country, across the planet? And I said, no, it'd just be the cubicle right next to me. And I said, wait a minute, these people are sitting exactly like 6 feet from you, and you're not just sticking your head up out of your cubicle to have the conversation? And he goes, yeah, that's kind of the case. So we become sort of reliant sometimes on hiding behind, in this case, emails to resolve conflicts. and it becomes a crutch. Is there any experience you have where people might be using your product as a crutch for not having a conversation face-to-face?
Actually, ours does drive face-to-face.
Oh, it does.
What they're doing is they are documenting the interviews, but they've actually got their laptop up between the two of them. They can turn it side, they can show it to them, whatever they want to do. And they can go, look, this is a conversation. And what I'm doing here is I'm just noting what we said. And then you're going to have the opportunity to read through that and see if it comes through as me appropriately documenting what you said. Or we usually try to get a note taker in there that's just documenting both sides of the conversation. And then they both agree to it and sign off on it. And so that being said, we always suggest you can't get a real feel for what's going on. I know you've done a lot of work on intuition, and you know that there are certain things that your logical mind will hear when you're answering questions, and especially if you're like typing things into a system. But if you can actually see that person and see their mannerisms and such, you learn so much more about where that information is coming from. You can tell when people are not giving you the full story. You can often tell when people are lying. You can also tell when people are fearful of telling you the truth that you won't see unless there is face-to-face. And so we suggest, even if it's a video chat or any way that you can do it where it's not just back and forth email, even if it just has to be audio, you pick up so much more. So we really do promote that. Unfortunately, with our younger workers that are coming in, they've been so driven to communicate only through text messages and such and emails that we're losing those communication skills. So my suggestion to companies is, if you want to fix your culture, you need to drive actual conversational meetings, and you need to require everyone to talk. And even if it's just, you know, a little bit or whatever, you need to really start to embrace a place where people actually have conversations with each other. Because as you know, unfortunately, in emails, I can have the sound in my head of what I'm trying to say, but the way that they read it and the tone that they read it in is up to them. And it is often completely different, and it can really make small problems into big problems.
You mentioned intuition, and of course, it's one of the words in the title of this podcast, and I want to maybe ask you a little bit about that. You had sent me over as part of the talking points for our episode today around that we kind of know intuitively what's right. Could you speak more about that and how that fits into accountability? Because if we know what's right in some ways, why don't we follow it? Why don't we follow that intuition that says this is the way to be? It's universal. What gets in the way?
And I can speak to that kind of mostly from an HR type aspect, if that's okay.
Sure.
But this even crosses over into executives and managers, because we are taught that when you're dealing with employees, there is a right and a wrong way of doing things. You must, especially in this day of, we're embracing diversity, but we're also trying to make all of our communications sterile enough that you're not segregating one group from another. And those two things are really hard to do. I'm actually just putting together a presentation on navigating those intersections between diversity and consistent civility, because it's a tough thing to do. But that's where your intuition is going to really help you, because if I am having a meeting with someone and say it's a difficult situation and we're sitting there talking about things, even though the book says this has to be, you know, you want to say it this way to everyone every time, you can tell in your gut, your intuition's telling you, you know what, talking to this person this way is obviously making them uncomfortable and they're not communicating. And so there are times when, if you know that, things are not going to change unless you listen to that. And so I think we all need to spend some time getting to know our intuition a little bit more and getting to trust it a little bit more. I've heard a lot of people speak about their intuition. You know, if I act on my intuition, isn't that setting me up for unconscious bias? And it's like, no, the two are completely different, because unconscious bias is actually your thinking mind that maybe has been trained to set you thinking on a certain path. But even if that's happening, your intuition can be sending you something going, yeah, you know what? This doesn't feel right. I'm not treating this person properly. And so there's got to be some balance in knowing what is exactly correct and proper and knowing how to communicate one-on-one with people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love this discussion. I'm wondering, are you then saying that intuition does not have unconscious bias?
I don't believe it does. And that's just me.
Okay, cool.
I believe that your intuition is, at its core, you at your best that understands truly how to relate person to person. And your intuition is going to drive that over unconscious bias, which to me is learned.
Fantastic. So that goes back to the comment you made before about doing what's right. And then intuition is, in a sense, is the way to get there. If we're following that intuition, we are not inhibited or hindered by all this learned behavior over time. That there's,
absolutely, sort of
there's an ultimate truth that we're all seeking, and that intuition is, in a sense, a way to get there, is what I'm sort of hearing you say.
That's absolutely right. My co-founder has on a board in her office that, you know, we need to do what's right instead of what's convenient.
So it's a great point, because of course it's a two-way street, how people interpret what you say and the meaning behind what you say. So I'm thinking about, all right, so I'm an intuitive leader. I've got a bold and forward-thinking idea. It might even be perceived as unpopular. It's innovative, and gosh knows we need innovation right now. Otherwise, we just recreate the past. What's your thought on that? How do you become a bold and forward-thinking leader who might be based on their intuition and realize that there could be fallout, that there could be misinterpretations, not because of how you said it or the style in which you said it or even the purity of your soul behind that message, but out of your own control, the other people's buttons got pushed. What's your thought around that? How do we balance these two things?
I have one word for that, and that would be ask. Just ask.
Okay.
Because then you're honoring the fact that people may disagree with you. And that doesn't mean that you ultimately don't go with what you feel is right. If you're that person in the company, or it's your company, or it's time to make some bold changes, to either figure it out or not. By entering others respectfully into that thought process, you're at least saying, I hear you. And you just be very forward as far as saying, no, I know this is different and I know this is bold and I know you're hearing this for the first time. So it may even be shocking to you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell this, but I'd like your feedback. And if you don't feel comfortable doing it now, you may want to go think about it for a while and then we'll have that discussion. And it may be one of those things where they don't agree with you. And once you explain how you came to where you came and they explain why they don't agree with you, well, you're able to come to some form of resolution or not. Mm-hmm. And then you've got decisions to make. Does that person want to stay on board, or does that person not feel like they're standing behind it anymore? But if you do it respectfully, you can even help them exit out if it's something where they just don't feel like the company's going in the direction that they had seen and wanted to. Okay, well, do you still want to be behind this? If you don't want to be behind this, that's okay. Let's help find something else that works for you. And I just think the more openly you can talk about these things, people are not always going to agree. And they're not always going to see things the same. And sometimes everyone in a room, especially when you get up to an executive level, is going to have very strong opinions that can just be polar opposites. And so it's like, let's respect everybody's input and let's talk through and make some decisions. But ultimately, there's likely one or two people in that room that are going to make the final decision. And that's got to be okay as well.
So Dana, how do you get to a place where you are tapping into this intuitive side that you talk about? Or do you have a process, a recipe, or a mindset, or a remembrance that gets you to that place?
Personally?
Yeah, personally.
Personally, and I, you know, okay, I like to sound like I have all the answers here, but trying to get doing it myself, you know, it's like I have, these are great conversations because they remind me what I need to do. But I need to get quiet. For me, that means getting into nature. I need to be out walking along the river. I need to be out sitting under the trees up on the mountain or whatever. But to really get myself to go, okay, I've been pushing and pushing and working a lot of hours and traveling and doing all these things, and I'm not feeling like my finger's on the pulse of what, you know, I feel like something's disturbing me inside. I need to get quiet. I need to get out by myself, and I need to just let go and listen. And that usually helps kind of get me back in balance a little bit.
I love it. I think that's a great advice. All right. So I'm a person who just heard what you said. I totally agree. I'm going to go walk the river, so to speak, and get out into nature. And I think that would be a great practice to have on a maybe weekly basis, maybe even a daily basis. Let's say I've had meetings all day. I'm going into a presentation. You mentioned you've got one coming up. And all of me needs to show up. Not just the data, not just the PowerPoint, but the whole person needs to show up if this is going to be an effective presentation or discussion. And so now it's time to call up that intuitive side. I don't have time to get in my car and drive down to the Deschutes River. I have to do something within my car to the building to get me in the zone.
Gotcha.
How do you do that?
Again, we're talking personally.
Yeah.
I have started practicing meditation, whether it be a 20-minute meditation or whether it be 1 minute of silencing my mind in the car before I walk into a meeting or before I, say, do a podcast.
Right.
You just need to take a minute, shut out everything else, make sure that you're coming from the right place. I'm not bringing my ego into the room. I'm not feeling a little bit shaky about something that happened at the office early this morning, but I need to just quiet down and go, I am here for a reason today. I'm here to share what I've learned and to learn from the other people around me. And you just need to go, okay, I'm going to let go of everything else. And that's, well, that's how I do it. That's what works for me.
I love it. I love it. So would you say, this is a softball question here that I'm going to throw over your plate. It's, it's not a great question because it's a yes or no answer. I'm definitely like leading the witness here on this one. So I'm calling myself out, but
okay.
It sounds like what you're saying is that if we are quiet and we can tap into that knowing, that intuition, which based on what you said, doesn't have the biases that we are taught, that we would be more accountable, more engaged, and better leaders and employees.
Absolutely. And it's, if I can expand on that, because I know that you don't want me to just answer yes or no.
That's all I wanted.
There you go. Okay, goodbye. truly, no one is completely 100% there. All the time. Nobody is exactly everything that they want to be at the flip of a switch. You know, we're human and life gets in the way. So what we need to do is we need to find little pockets of time to just say, okay, for the next few minutes, life is not controlling me. I am just going to be here. Okay. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely.
Okay.
I think that's a great advice. And like you, I haven't figured this out. I value it, but I'm a student just like a lot of people are on this topic. And I'm constantly hearing myself say things to people and I go, so are you paying attention to what you just said?
I do the same exact thing.
It's like what you need to hear. Yeah.
My employees are going to go, okay, I listened to the podcast and I know this person and she's like that sometimes,
right.
You know, and like you said, everything is learning. Everything is growing. Everything is about us just trying to do tomorrow a little teeny bit better than we did today.
Yes. Yes. Awesome. So what's coming up for you? Are there any kinds of blogs, books, podcasts, presentations? How can anybody who hears this connect with you or participate in some of your work?
Okay. I do speak, I would say probably 10, 12 times a year. If you happen to be an HR professional or you are a professional that goes to some of these HR conferences, I do speak occasionally at the national conferences, but I really like the state level conferences. And so I go to a lot of those. We're just setting up the schedule for next year, so I can make sure I get that out on my LinkedIn page. It's Dana Barbato, SPHR, which is a senior professional of human resources. But if you go to Dana Barbato on LinkedIn, you'll find me.
Yep.
I have an HR investigators blog that sometimes is about new laws, sometimes about kind of catchy, you know, these are tricks I've learned, the tricks and tips of the trade of doing investigations, and sometimes just about working with people and how we can get better at it. So if you go to our company website, investapro.com, just click on the blog and you can sign up, and we don't bombard you. I'm not writing enough to get you like, you know, three times a week. You'll see one or two a month that land in your inbox. And yes, there will be a book. It's not done yet, but there will be a book.
Aha. Okay. Yeah. That's great. Well, Dana, this has been fascinating. You made my afternoon. This has been a lot of fun. You've got so many great things going, and I love your perspective. And best of continued success in what you're doing with your company and all the people that you're touching. It's just fantastic.
Thanks, Dean. It was great talking to you, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.